Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Lots of things are better together. Hockey, food, golf, or a nice cold one on a warm spring day hanging out on the deck. But if you really want to take things to the next level, drink some Labatt Blue Lights with your friends and live life to the power of we. Always enjoy responsibly. Beer, Labatt USA, Buffalo, New York.
This is a GM Shuffle.
I mean, nobody ever understands how they got to get from good to great. They just think, okay, adding two or three players is going to do the trick. You know, it's just, it's the season of perpetual hope right now.
You're listening to the GM Shuffle with Michael Lombardi, presented by DraftKings and VSiN. Here is Femi Abebefe.
Welcome to another edition of the GM Shuffle with Michael Lombardi, presented by DraftKings and VSiN. I'm your host, Femi Abebefe. Michael, the NFL offseason is officially here. It feels like we had all these calendar events, but now we're in the thick of May and heading into the summer months. How are we doing, buddy?
We're doing great. We're in the season, as Kevin from Home Alone said, we're in the season of perpetual hope. I mean, is there not a team that's going to win the Super Bowl? Malik Willis looks sensational, Femi. They've never seen a quarterback throw the ball as well as he's thrown it in the last few days of practice. Everybody's draft picks are better than expected. I mean, you know, this is the perfect time to build hope. It's the greatest time of the year. The one thing I will say this. If I had a nickel for every time a scout or somebody in the front office said, you know, it's going to be hard to cut this team. It's going to be really hard. It's going to be hard to cut this team. We're not going to be able to do it. We're going to get a bunch of draft picks for some of these guys that don't make the team. That's being said all throughout the league. That's the biggest verbiage that's going on throughout the league. And the reality of it is you won't get jack shit for any of those things that you think right now.
It's every single team is, oh, yeah, I think we can win about 10 games. That's probably the floor.
Easy. No problem. I mean, we've made such improvement. I mean, nobody ever understands how they got to get from good to great. They just think, okay, adding two or three players is going to do the trick. You know, it's just it's the season of perpetual hope right now.
Yeah, that's what we can cling to in the spring and summer months here before we get to the fall and then the reality actually starts to set in. But make sure to subscribe, rate, and review to the podcast. As always, tweet at us at MLombardiNFL is where you can find Michael. At Femi Abebefe is where you can find me. Our producer, Stephen Bond, is out this week, so we got our guy Elliot Bowman filling in for us here. Elliot, one of our guys at VSiN. He's one of our sharp young bucks, so glad to have him in the saddle with us here. But Michael, we were talking before we even got this thing started here because it's the offseason. We're watching all sorts of different things. Earlier this week, we had the NBA draft lottery here, and a lot of people fascinated by this NBA draft lottery. I know you have some takes as to what we saw earlier this week.
Like, if you and I went into a room and said, how could we make a show like the worst show possible? Like, it was almost a Saturday Night Live skit. It was like, okay, let's just do something completely bad. I mean, you could not make a show anywhere less interesting, any worse than the NBA draft lottery. It was, I felt bad for Malika Andrews. I mean, she's up there trying to lead the brigade. That's not fair to her. Poor Woj. He's got 10,000 bits of information. He's only allowed to say two things. Then we go to Kendrick Perkins, who's never been in a draft room in his life. And then we go to Jay Billis, who's only watched college basketball. I mean, like, who's putting this together? Like who's, are we throwing darts at ESPN, the worldwide leader? Like, if we're going to have a draft show, why don't we have a draft show? And then we got this guy, Mike Schmidt, who's over there. Was he the third baseman for the Phillies? I don't know. But you know how they love to make somebody a draft expert, right? They love to make somebody a draft, even though the guy's had no experience drafting a player in his life. I mean, you got Bobby Marks, who's run a draft, right? And meanwhile, he's not even on the show. He's somewhere in Elba. He doesn't even know. And we can't get him. We got Schmidt telling us that Holmgren's the best player in the draft. Meanwhile, everybody in the league's telling me that the guy with the biggest risk is Holmgren because he could be Sean Bradley. It's like, okay, we got it. I was texting two guys from the NBA. I'm like, could there be a worse performance than this show? What you think? I mean, is it just me or am I crazy?
No, I was very confused by the whole thing and how serious they were all taking it, to be quite honest. I mean, now it's expanded to where you're seeing four, five, even six prospects showing up to the draft lottery. I was confused. I'm like, are we drafting tonight? Like, what's going on here?
What are they doing there? I mean, like, and then you know what's funny? We didn't see one highlight clip of any of them. We didn't break down any of them. Like, why don't we just break them down? Like, okay, you know, they say Smith is this elite shooter. And you know, when you look at his numbers, they aren't elite. You know, it's like he's a great shooter and he's going to get better, you know. But I mean, like, and we're talking about Holmgren. Did anybody watch the Arkansas game against with Holmgren in it? Did anybody happen to watch that on that table there? I take Woj out of the conversation because he knows. Did any of the experts watch Holmgren in the Arkansas game get his ass kicked? I mean, like, seriously.
Apparently, like, we don't remember.
We obviously don't. And then we have a show where we're banning around. Oh, my God. You know, they're going to be doing this and that. You know, like let's – why can't we talk about the needs or how we're going to work it or what free agency ties into it? Like, let's make a show where we educate the – that was so bad, Fem. I mean, Dominic, my grandson, could have produced a better show. There would have been dinosaurs. There would have been giant colossal squid. We would have at least had a theme. Like, if you're going to have a party, have a theme, right? If you have kids, yes. You have a theme. Like, let's have a theme. Let's have a draft. Okay, let's go over last year's draft. Let's talk about what missed, what didn't. But everybody's great. Everybody's great. We got the greatest player. Meanwhile, can I ask you this?
Uh-huh.
Now, look, I'm a fat guy. I admit that. But, like, Holmgren, 7 weeks since we've seen Holmgren walk off the court in San Francisco. Do you think this dude's done one thing to change his body? I mean, besides buy a suit, like, he looks skinny as that. Like, what's he been doing for 7 weeks?
I think it's to the point where I don't think he can gain weight. You know, I wish I had that problem that he has as well. But it seems like his frame can't add on anything. We'll see what happens when draft day comes. But he's about 7'1", 190. The NBA draft coming up in about 5 weeks. We just got done with the NFL draft. So let's turn our attention to something that we can celebrate here, Michael, after we saw the draft lottery broadcast earlier this week. But I know.
Thank you for letting me ramp on that. I've been waiting on that.
I tweeted about it the night of. I was very confused about what I was watching on that night there. But earlier this week, you actually finished a book that you've been writing for months on end now, I think maybe even a year or so. And this is going to be a really fascinating book. I know you've already written Gridiron Genius. You love writing, which is what I love about you here, because I'm a journalist at heart. So writing is where my background was as well. But this book is going to be really fascinating, detailing a lot of things about the league history. And the cherry on top, in my opinion, is probably your top 100 players list for the entire league. That is going to be a really, really good history lesson for any NFL junkie.
Yeah, I mean, it's been an education for me to write it. I wish I actually would have done this study, done this project when I was in the league, because it's given me a perspective of some of the players that I didn't know, and I had to go back and watch them and study them and kind of get into the histrionics of it all. But, you know, it's been fun. It's taken me a long time to write. It's 170,000 words that I didn't think I could write, but I did. I'm sure it's going to get cut down once I take it. It's really two books, Femi. It's the beginning of the book is it starts off with trying to explain to people the five coaching trees, the what I call the white oaks, which are basically the roots of all the coaches that are coaching today, started from one of these oaks trees, and then they've branched out and created their own. And then it goes into some of the discussions about could players play today, you know, then and now, and then who's missing from the hall. And then we get into the history of the draft and how the draft started and what the foundations of the draft were. And then we obviously get into television. And then from that point, we then launch into my top 100, which I'm still configuring. I've written up 100 players now. I'm going to go back over it again. I've got two players from the 30s, four from the 40s, 10 from the 50s, 18 from the 60s, 20s from the 70s, 14 from the 80s, 15 from the 90s, 13 from the 2000s, and four from the 2010. I have a couple that are not in the hall in my top 100, which is I've got to prove my point on those, why they should be in the hall and why they're two of the best players. So it's been fun. And I try to tell the story before every player to kind of tie it into it to educate the reader on what it's all about. It's a journey, really. We haven't come up with a title. This is the hardest part about it, Femi. I can't come up with a title.
Should we outsource this?
I need help. I feel like Springsteen when he's writing Darkness. I just can't come up with... It's a journey through the Hall of Fame, essentially what it is. But there's got to be the word football in it, you know? So It's not. It's similar to the book of basketball that Simmons wrote, but my perspective is different than his, and it's a different book. But and obviously, I don't want to call it the book of football. But it's a little bit along that. It's really about the Hall of Fame, and it's a journey through the Hall, and it's got some things that I don't think people were really truly aware of.
Yeah, we'll outsource the title. Any of the listeners or the viewers, if you can send us a title request, if that's okay with you, Michael, we can kind of brainstorm and see which ones are the best here. I'll start thinking about it over the weekend if I can figure out a title for your book here, because I think it's an interesting book. It's going to be very fascinating. I'm a football junkie. I can't wait to read it here because football, it's comparing the eras is very challenging, and I commend you for taking on that challenge, because it's hard to always compare when the game was just played much differently in the 30s, 40s, and 50s than it is in now. I mean, the game is different from now from the 90s. It's a totally different game here as it evolves.
It is, but it is different, but yet it's similar. I thought the same thing when I started the project. I kind of was almost indifferent to some of the players in the 60s. Ah, you know, Buckus, what could he do? And then when you study it, you know, and you look at it and you examine what they could do. Like Buckus would be sensational today. You know, he would be a better version of Mekhi Parsons. He would be able to attack from the second level as the Mike linebacker. He would be able to kind of be the fifth rusher in the blitz. He could be the fourth rusher. His speed would really be able to play Tampa too, because he could really run. You know, so I think once you get through the biases of some of the things and you try to shape the player into today's thought process and then utilize him, it becomes a whole, like Alan Page would be great today. He would be even better today than he was in the 60s when he was rushing, or the 70s with the Purple People Eater. Same with Deacon Jones, even if you took away the head slap. So it's been fun, and it's an education. Now, you know, I think the one position that's been interesting is when you write about is the cornerback, because they could mug guys back then. You know, Mel Blanc could basically just destroy. He was the greatest breakfast corner of all time. He won early in every single route. But I think eventually they would adapt to it. So it's been fun. I'm looking forward to it. I just got to come up with a title.
You also wrote a column for VSiN earlier this morning as well. And this is highlighting players who need to step up in 2022 to help out their teams. Why don't you give the folks a little bit of an appetizer of what you wrote this morning?
Well, I think, you know, we focus so much, Femi, on oh, you know, we got to get this player better. You know, this rookie coming in, he's really going to make a difference in our football team. And we've got to get this guy who we signed as a free agent really has to step up. When yet in reality, if you're the Kansas City Chiefs, right, if you're the Chiefs and you're sitting there and all the Chief fans are talking about is they're worried about who's going to replace Tyreek Hill. Well, the reality of it really is it comes down to simply this. Patrick Mahomes has to play better. Nobody talks about it, but Patrick Mahomes has to. If you look at Patrick Mahomes' numbers from last year compared to 2018, 2019, it's a huge decline. Now, you could say, well, a lot of it's the offensive line. No, it's not. No, it's not. If you really study it, it's a lot of it is his fundamentals, his techniques, his decision-making. He would be the first, I think, to admit to anybody he didn't play well. And that level of play, like if you're the GM of the Chiefs or Andy Reid, You got to get him to play better. You got to get him to play to a level. Lamar Jackson, you got to get him to play to a level. Tannehill. Tannehill's numbers from 2 years ago to last year, understanding Derrick Henry wasn't playing, are significantly declining. And so, and the same thing with Russell Wilson, who we talked about. So to me, all this conversation about hope and enthusiasm with all these new players, when in reality, you got to get your older players, your best players to play their best.
Yeah, Mahomes was really up and down last season there. He played great in that AFC divisional game against the Bills, and then played great in the first half against the Bengals, then all of a sudden short-circuited in the second half and in overtime there. I didn't even recognize the guy who was behind center for the Chiefs against the Bengals there in the second half and OT.
I mean, like, you go back to the four-interception game against the Chargers earlier in the year. You know, I mean, like, he was bad. He was bad for a while. Now, everybody makes excuses for him. And look, do I think he'll turn it around? Absolutely. I don't doubt it. But let's call a spade here. Like, he wasn't good. You know, he was as much part of the reason why they didn't go to the Super Bowl as anybody. Those three passes in overtime against the Bengals are probably three of the worst passes I've ever seen in my life by a pro quarterback.
He was begging for them to intercept the ball, and they finally did on that third down deep shot there that he tried to fit into Tyreek Hill in double coverage. Just not a good second half or overtime for Patrick Mahomes in the AFC Championship game. Want to ask you, though, about Cleveland and Deshaun Watson, because this is starting to gain a little bit of steam about the league potentially coming to a conclusion on whatever suspension they might levy to Watson here. Now, Deshaun has met with the league this week in Texas, I believe it is. What do you think? What are you hearing about a potential suspension length here for Deshaun Watson? Because we assume he's going to get suspended. It's just how long.
Right. And I think everybody has a different theory of it. And I can't really speculate. Do I think four? Yeah. Do I think eight? Perhaps. I mean, you know, Brady got suspended four games for they never even proved he messed with the footballs. Yeah. I mean, and they fined the team $1 million and took away a draft pick. I mean, who can predict based on no evidence what the league could come up with? But to me, I think that there's two factors here. Do I think he gets suspended? Yeah. Do I know how long? No. Do I think Baker Mayfield fits in for him at quarterback while he's suspended? I mean, that's a joke that people actually think. You can't do that. Like, that's a comedy. Like, stop with that. Like, they're not holding Baker Mayfield because they're worried about Watson. They're holding Baker Mayfield because they don't want to have to pay the $18 million. They can't bring Baker Mayfield into that building and then have Watson in the building at the same time. It just won't work. It just won't work. They have the cap room, but it won't work from a chemistry standpoint on your football team. It's the same thing with Trey Lance in San Francisco. Mm-hmm. You can't bring Garoppolo back and make him the backup and have Trey Lance sitting there. You can't. You just can't do it. It's the reason why Belichick cut Cam Newton. You can't let Mac Jones be the starter if Cam's going to be the back. It just doesn't work, yes. Even though on paper it looks good. So to me, I'm told the Mayfield deal's being tied up by somebody in the Browns. I don't know if it's the owner, if it's the general manager, it's the president. I don't know who it is, but it's being tied up. I do expect it to get done before we go on vacation. The NFL teams go on vacation. You and I, we don't, but the yeah. NFL teams do.
I was going to say, what is this vacation here? That's only for Stephen Bond, not us.
Yeah.
Appreciate you, Stephen. Hope you're listening. But let's take a quick break here. On the other side, I want to bounce one more news and notes item off you. Then we'll start talking about some of these win totals in the NFC and the AFC. This is the GM Shuffle with Michael Lombardi. The 82-game preseason is in the books, and it's finally time for the real season. Don't miss out on any of the NBA playoff action at DraftKings Sportsbook, an official sports betting partner of the NBA. From the play-in tournament through the finals, DraftKings Sportsbook has you covered with same-game parlays, live betting, odds boosts, and so much more. I mean, we have a plethora of games to bet on. You can bet on game-by-game, totals, sides, series props, conference finals, MVP, NBA finals, MVP, whatever you want. DraftKings has it. So all you have to do is download the DraftKings Sportsbook app and use code SHUFFLE. New customers bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets instantly. That's code SHUFFLE only on DraftKings. The crown is yours. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER or in West Virginia, visit www.1800gambler.net. In New York, call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369. In Connecticut, help is available for problem gambling. Call 888-789-7777 or visit ccpg.org. Please play responsibly on behalf of Boot Hill Casino and Resort in Kansas. 21 plus, age varies by jurisdiction. Void in Ontario. Bonus bets expire 168 hours after issuance. See dkng.com/bball for eligibility and deposit restrictions, terms, and responsible gaming resources. All right, Michael, we have seen some teams starting to make moves post-draft now, and the Philadelphia Eagles are a team that has been a headliner throughout this offseason, and earlier this week they signed New York Giants free agent cornerback James Bradbury. It's a one-year deal worth $10 million. Bradbury moving on after a new regime comes in the Meadowlands, and now he fills a void for the Eagles, who need a lot of secondary help, and it appears they got it in Bradbury.
Well, I mean, we'll see. You know, Bradbury wasn't a great cover guy last year. You know, I mean, he didn't get cut because just for cap reasons. He got cut because he didn't play as well. But I do think it's a great move for Philly. I mean, they get themselves a legitimate starting corner to go along with Darius Slay. It kind of takes the pressure off their secondary. But look, Philadelphia is all about, you know, they played so much zone last year. It's really all about their front. You know, it's the way Jonathan Gannon plays it, it's that Matt Eberflus defense. They're going to drop the spots. They're going to read the shoulder of the quarterback. They're going to rally the football, and they're going to rely on their front. You know, their front's got to come through. It's going to be Hassan Reddick's got to really be a good player. But I think, to me, the Eagles at 9.5, I think it's 9.5 now. It was earlier. It was earlier. It was at like 8.5. I mean, before these moves have started to collect, I think they were. The Cowboys are still at 10, the leader in the clubhouse based on DraftKings over-under props. I like the Eagles to go over the 9.5. I don't think they have a hard schedule at all. Just look at it. I mean, they play the NFC South, the North, and most of the NFC teams in the East play the North, along with, you know, they get the Commanders, they get the Giants. Look, this Philly team, I think, is a lot of pressure on Hurts. Does he need to play better? He needs to play better throwing the football. Running the football, that's not an issue for him. Mm-hmm. But it's going to be interesting to see what they do defensively. You know, last year when they played against really good quarterbacks, they struggled. You know, they had five games against quarterbacks, six when you count the playoff game with Brady, you know, where they just really, they couldn't stop Justin Herbert. They couldn't stop, you know, they couldn't stop Patrick Mahomes. They couldn't stop Brady either time. They couldn't stop Derek Carr. They struggled. And if their front's not dominating, it becomes a problem. But I like Philly. I really do. I think there's a lot of enthusiasm here in this city. I mean, you know, one thing for sure, fam, they got, I don't know about you, but they got the parade route already figured out here in Philly. They've got it already done.
You know what, Michael? I might be in lockstep with the folks planning the parade here for the Philadelphia Eagles because I like the over 9.5 as well. I went even further here with the Eagles. I bet them to win the Super Bowl at 50-1.
Wow.
We'll talk about Super Bowl stuff later on in the offseason, but that's just a little nugget there, a little preview.
Wow.
I bet
that
the Eagles.
Some balls, fammy. I love it. Wow. Tell me why.
I'm pushing the chips into the center of the table here just because you mentioned it. The schedule, I think, is really favorable for this Eagles team. I think they have a chance to be the number one seed in the NFC when you look at things because Tampa's got a tough schedule. The Rams have a tough schedule. Green Bay, their schedule is manageable, but, you know, we don't know how things are going to go with Devontae Adams now here in Las Vegas. But the Eagles, they remind me almost like the Tennessee Titans of last year to where a favorable schedule, things might break their way to where, yeah, they're probably not seen as the best team if you were to go head up, but I think they're the team that could be in the most favorable position when we get to January as they sit as a number one seed. So at 50-1, I was like, let me take a flyer because I think this team can definitely win the NFC East. It pains me to say that as a Dallas Cowboys fan about the Philadelphia Eagles, but hey, you know, we root for the pockets as well, as we like to do here with our folks at VSiN. But this Eagles team, they're really loaded. The offensive line's really good. The defensive line is really good. I like what they do out wide with the pass catchers with Smith, now A.J. Brown there, Goddard, a really good tight end. I'm buying into Jalen Hurts in the regular season. We'll see what happens in the playoffs, but in the regular season, I think that he can get this team to a 12-13 win caliber team here just because of the schedule and the talent that they've acquired.
I think they're a hard team to play. I mean, not defensively, they're not a hard team to play. I think they're a really hard team to play offensively from their running game, not from their passing game. I mean, their passing game, look, they were the last team in the league in terms of passing attempts last year. You know, they were 25th in the league in terms of passing yards last year. They were 25th in passing touchdowns last year. You know, but that all being said is this running game in terms of yards per attempt is hard to defend. You know, it's really hard to defend. And I think unless you really get used to it, unless you understand it, I mean, they had five games where they rushed over 200 yards last year. You know, they had 10 games where they were over 149 yards. I mean, so they can run the ball and they don't turn the ball over. I mean, it's kind of a regular season recipe. I mean, they can do it. Now, whether they can do it come playoff time, I don't know. To me, I think Hurts got to play better. I don't trust Hurts. That being said, to me, if you're playing them on the schedule, you're Detroit or you're Chicago, you better make sure you get ready for them in the OTA days. Like if you've got 12 OTA days, you got to take one of those, two of those OTA days and say, okay, we're going to practice against the Eagles defensively, their offense against our defense, because we need to kind of understand how they run the ball because they do it differently than most teams.
Fly, Eagles, fly. It pains me to say it, but fly, Eagles fly.
They're flying here, bro. But they're flying here. I mean, they got it all. There's no doubt. There's no doubt. There's an excitement here, and you know, this is a little bit. The expectations have risen here. You know, and you know, Howie Roseman usually gets ripped, but he's getting praised, and the Bradbury signing was like the cherry on top of the sundae.
I want to bounce some other win totals off you in the NFC. We'll stay in the NFC here. This segment. We'll go to the AFC in the next one, but. One NFC win total that stood out to me, a couple in the AFC, or rather, I should say, in the NFC North, it was the Minnesota Vikings, and their win total set at 9 over at DraftKings, our show sponsor, and I kind of like the under on Minnesota there, just because I don't see this being a 10-win team. They feel like a 9-8 kind of caliber team, and that's what they felt like ever since Kirk Cousins arrived in 2017. It's just Kirk Cousins is an average quarterback. They're probably going to be an average team. I think it's more likely they win 8 games than they win 10 games. Curious your thoughts.
Well, I mean, I'm a little bit thinking they could. I mean, the just reading some of the commentary lately about Zimmer's kind of the way he coached with the fear factor into the team, you know, I think certainly probably gives a sense of relief. But look, I think when you hire an offensive coach and you've been so bad offensively in terms of third down, I mean, you really have been bad offense. I mean, they're 26 in the league on third down offense. I mean, it's remarkable they won 9 games. And I think defensively, they were not as good as we thought they could be last year because of injuries, I think, too. But, you know, I mean, they gave up 24th in points and points allowed last year, you know, and where they were really poor was people threw the football on them left and right and they couldn't stop it. I mean, and so I think their work's cut out. They've got to improve their base. But, you know, Chicago, I don't think's better. I don't think Detroit can really catch them. So for me, you know, I think the number, I would stay away. I think it's the right number. Yeah. But I'm interested to see O'Connell. I was impressed with O'Connell's comments today about he wants to be the head coach of the team, not just the offense coordinator, which I think is going to be the critical component of him being successful, how he develops it, what he does. If they keep Cook healthy, I mean, this Cook guy is sensational. You know, they're starting to play him a little bit at slot receiver, which I think they should do. Yeah, I saw that. You know, which I think is really good. I mean, you get him in the slot. Like, it's like McCaffrey with Carolina. Like, why wouldn't you just play McCaffrey in the slot? Like, get another running back in behind, play the nickel back. You need two nickel backs when you have McCaffrey because you can't trust him. The guy's only played 10 games in 2 years. So make him a nickel slot receiver. No one can cover him over there. And then get a nickel back to go with him. And all of a sudden, you're in two backs, two receivers, one tight end. You know, you got a running game. How are they going to match that? And then getting him some reps in that area. I mean, McCaffrey could be, and so could Cook.
No, I'm not in love with their offensive line, and that's usually the first place I look at when I look at a lot of teams.
I'm like,
what are you doing on the O-line? And if I don't love it, then I just don't think that you're going to be able to fulfill the expectations throughout the regular season because that is a position that's the most important.
I've been saying that for years. I'm with you on that, Femi, but I've been saying that for years on the Rams. I thought the Rams, I mean, Whitworth was a good player, but I thought some of the Rams, I mean, they got embarrassed in that Super Bowl by the, you know, but I'm with you on their line. You know, I think they've got to play better. There's no doubt. I'm with you. That's been the Achilles. And their defensive front's got to play way better. Yeah. They haven't played good up front.
Yeah. They'll have Danielle Hunter back this year. He was injured last year, so he should be able to help. But how much can he help that defensive line that needs a lot of it? The other team in the NFC North, and you mentioned them, Chicago Bears. I like their under 6.5 here. And this, to me, feels like it's a reset on what they've been doing over the last few years here. Ryan Poles, the new general manager in there with Matt Eberflus in year one as a head coach. And all the moves that they've made so far this offseason is a reset, it looks like, to me at least. Do you think that the Bears are almost punting on this 2022 season?
I mean, I don't know if they're punting, but I think they're reorganizing. I think they're going to try to build something that they need that can sustain itself. I mean, it's a mess. They got to clean it up, right? You talk about offensive line now.
Yeah.
You're talking about a bad offensive line, right?
It might be the worst.
With a quarterback who you want to protect, right? And then defensively, you know, I mean, Quinn played really well for him last year, but are they any better defensively?
No.
You know, they're going to run this scheme that Eberflus runs. It's a very, very pedestrian-type scheme that requires the defensive front to be really good. And so I don't see it. I really don't. And, you know, Montgomery's a good back. Can he stay healthy? But can they block well enough? I think there's a lot of pressure on them. I think to me, the Falcons and the Bears are two teams. The Falcons are at 5, you know, which to me, I think it's going to be hard for them to get to 6. Mm-hmm. I do think they could push at 5. But for the Bears to get to 7, I think that's going to be really hard.
Yeah, it's going to take a miracle. And Justin Fields, I'm a fan of his game, and maybe he takes a year or two leap despite not really having the best situation around him. But that's the only way I can see them going over 6.5 is if Fields just absolutely wows us and they're able to get to 7.
Let me ask you a team. You think the Giants can get to 8?
Ooh. You know what?
I'm 7 right here. I mean, they're at 7. I mean, there's a, I don't know where the enthusiasm comes from, but at 7?
I'm a little optimistic about the Giants just because I like Brian Daboll as a play caller. Now we'll see what happens as a head coach here, but I think they put a good staff together. Wink Martindale's a defensive coordinator that I respect quite a bit. And I think that team is, they've got some talent. Can Daniel Jones protect the football? That's what it's going to come down to, because...
Well, can he play fast too? I mean, he always seems like when the game gets faster, he doesn't.
Deer in headlights.
Seven. But think about this, Femi. All we've heard about is how great the Jets offseason's been. They're 5.5. The Giants are at 7.
Yeah, and the Giants at 7 probably has a lot to do with the schedule that they're going to be playing. The NFC North, AFC South, a lot of these NFC East teams benefiting from the quote-unquote easier schedules here. But yeah, maybe if Brian Daboll is a superstar caliber head coach or a really good head coach there, if that's an upgrade for them, maybe they can get to 7-8 wins here. But yeah, it's a tough one. I don't think I would ever do anything with that one. I'd probably just stay away because I think that number's probably right. I don't want to go under because of the schedule there, but the talent, it doesn't seem like it's a 9 or 10 win caliber team here. 8 is what you need to win that one, but that's a stay away. If you think they can win 8, maybe they're just really good and maybe they have a chance as a dark horse to win the NFC East. A team that I think can go over 8, though, Michael, is the New Orleans Saints. I think this team is going to the playoffs. Like, this roster is really good, I think.
I think they've really improved themselves. I don't doubt that. I would say this, too. If you're betting over totals, make sure you understand who the backup quarterback is.
Yes.
Make sure you know that if you're betting the Giants to go to 8, that Tyrod Taylor might have to play a couple games and win a couple. You know, whereas in the Saints situation, you got Andy Dalton, you've got Jameis Winston. I agree with you. I mean, their defense has improved. You know, they've done a good job of adding pieces. The one thing I give Mickey Loomis a ton of credit for, he's never deterred from the root cause of how you win football, offensive and defensive line. You know, the one thing I wrote after I got done writing one of the defensive linemen, and I just basically concluded it as a side note. Like, when you come up with a nickname for your defensive line, Fearsome Foursome, Doomsday, you know, Killer Bees, whatever it is, the Steel Curtain, it's because you have 5 or 6 great defensive linemen, and that's why you win titles. Like, nobody has come up with names for the Redskins had names for their receiving corps 1 year. But I mean, like, everybody drafts receivers, but when you come up with 5, 6 defensive linemen that can dominate, that's what ultimately gives you a chance to win more than 10 games every single year, whether it's the Purple Peter-Eaters, whether it's the Doomsday, whatever it is. And yet we keep gravitating back to wide receivers. So my point on that long story is I think the Saints have done that with their offensive and defensive lines.
Yeah, no, the wide receivers are flashy. That's why people love the wide receivers. They play fantasy football. They bet their props and all this stuff. You can't bet offensive line props, but offensive line is the most important position group on the team, in my opinion. And I look at this Saints depth chart, and I just look at it and I say, where are the holes? I don't really see any holes here. Maybe you have questions about Jameis Winston at quarterback. Sounds like he's progressing pretty well in his rehab. Should be a full go at training camp. But I don't see any holes other than maybe if Winston just becomes a turnover machine like his days back in Tampa Bay. But this team, in my opinion, looks like
missing the first 4 games a hole, right? So you're going to, you know, that gives you some concern. But I'm with you. I mean, I think their defensive front's good. Davenport's got to play well. They've got depth. They've improved their corner situation. I mean, look, their offensive line, they replaced Armstead with Penning, the kid they drafted in the first round. They've got some depth in their offensive line. You know, they get Jarvis Landry to be the slot receiver. Olivier, they get it on the outside to go with Michael Thomas. I mean, now Callaway, the guy that they were talking about being the guy last year, is the fourth receiver.
Yeah, it's a really good roster. You got to credit Mickey Loomis for getting this, and they're going for it. And a lot of people thought they might try to reset now that Sean Payton is left, but they are going for it. They clearly feel that they're a playoff team, and I agree with them. The last team in the NFC that I want to bounce you off here before we take another quick break is the San Francisco 49ers. Their win total set at 10, and I kind of like the under for the 49ers. And Trey Lance, all indications are he's going to be the starter week 1 for San Francisco. We'll see what happens with Jimmy Garoppolo later this offseason. But they have a tough schedule. And this is a team where I'm still questioning if Kyle Shanahan is all the way bought in on Trey Lance. Is this a situation that it could be Lance almost having to prove himself all throughout training camp to be like, hey, can we tweak the offense to fit more of what I like to do? Or is it still going to be the Shanahan offense that we've seen him run with Jimmy Garoppolo in the past?
Well, I think it's going to be some version of the Shanahan offense. I mean, let's face it. That's what he's made his living on. That's what he's gotten his career. But, you know, there's going to have to be obviously things that are put in place that allows Lance to succeed and demonstrate he's got the ability. I mean, if you're betting the over there, you're basically telling me you believe in Lance based on no evidence whatsoever. You know, it's based on no evidence whatsoever. And so, you know, they play, they don't have an easy schedule. You know, they play the NFC South, which does help, but they play the AFC West, which doesn't help. So they've got this kind of plus they play their own way, you know, and so it becomes, I think it's a little bit of a problem for him. But look, it's to me, this is all about how much confidence do you have in Lance? Simple as that. That defensive front's really good, though. You talk about a team that could nickname their defensive front, the 49ers could. And that's going to keep them in a lot of games. And they get their running game back again. I think that certainly will help. You know, but I think 10's hard to play. I really do. I think it's hard to think they're going to win 11 games.
Yeah, Trey Lance, and we've talked about it earlier this offseason on the podcast, that the grade is incomplete. We don't know what Trey Lance can do. He could be really great. He could be really bad. Time will tell for Trey Lance. But let's take a quick break, and I want to bounce some AFC teams off of you here on the other side. This is the GM Shuffle with Michael Lombardi. All right, Michael, let's talk AFC, and this is the superior conference, I think, in a lot of people's opinions, just based on the offseason moves that we've seen this year. And these next two are kind of correlated, so I want to give them to you in a pair. The Cincinnati Bengals, their win total set at 10. Baltimore Ravens are at 9.5. I like Cincinnati under 10, Ravens over 9.5, just because the Ravens, they were so banged up last year, but were still able to win 8 games. I mean, they were 8-3 prior to Lamar Jackson's injury. If he's able to stay healthy, they get that secondary healthy. The running backs, the offensive line appears to be in better shape. I'm going Baltimore over Cincinnati under. Curious to get your take on it.
Well, I mean, let's start. Baltimore is one of those teams that, I mean, Lamar's got to play back to 19. You know, he's got to go back to that, you know, ability to run with the football the way he did. I mean, he still, this year he averaged 11 carries per game in the games, the 12 games that he played. He averaged 11 2 years ago when he won the MVP. But his yards, his longest run last year, Femi, was only 31 yards. So he's got to improve in that area. And then he's got to make some of the throws. I mean, you know, the number one target on this team was Mark Andrews. He had 153 targets last year. You know, they want to throw the ball in between the numbers, you know, and because Lamar refuses to throw the ball or throws the ball effectively outside the numbers, especially in the deep quadrant of the field, teams really don't have to worry about defending it. You know, when he played at Louisville, he was very effective throwing post, throwing over routes, you know, deep. I mean, they would open up a lot of games. I was at the Missouri Clinic in March with Bobby Petrino, and we were talking about it a little bit. And Lamar's really accurate deep when he throws the ball in the middle of the field, whether it's a post or an over. On those outside the number throws, you know, he wasn't as good. And Hollywood Brown was supposed to give him that vertical complex out there. But Hollywood averaged 11-1. He was the sixth leading receiver on their team in terms of yards per catch. You know, sixth. I mean, and he had 143 targets. So, you know, they couldn't get him the ball. So I think a lot of it, I'm with you. I think Stanley being back certainly helps. Mm-hmm. I think Linderbaum being at center helps. I think whoever plays right tackle, whether it's Morgan Moses or whether it's Juwan James, I think that's going to help. And then I think when you get J.K. Dobbins back, I think that's a tremendous help for him. So I'm there. I think, you know, Cincinnati is one of those teams, though, you know, that I think has really improved their offensive line. I think that as bad as they were last year in that line, you know, by getting Karras to play center, he's a smart guy, tough. They get Kappa to play left guard. They get the kid from Clemson who had some issues off the field, but they've seemed to sort him through. Carmen at left guard. And then Williams and Collins at tackle. I mean, Williams has got to play better. He's not a great player, but he's got to play better. But Collins can play better. And Frank Pollock, their line coach, does a good job.
Yeah.
I'd be hard not to think they couldn't be as good defensively. Will they be as good? I'm always worried about them defensively, but they came through last year. So with Burrow, I don't know if I play that under. I really don't.
It's a scary one because Joe Burrow could take another step. He could be the best quarterback in the league by the end of next season. Who knows what Joe Burrow's ceiling is. But to me, why I'm more attracted to the under is just because – The other teams in the division, I think, are going to be a lot healthier. I mean, Cleveland was banged up last year. Baltimore was banged up last year. And Cincinnati, they won the division, playing that first place schedule. There's no easy breaks. That schedule is difficult. They have to play Buffalo. They have to play Kansas City. These are difficult teams that, yeah, they beat Kansas City twice last year, but those games were coin flip games. I mean, they could have easily gone in favor of the Chiefs, both of them. So yeah, I think no that I think it's going to be a tough schedule. And for them to replicate that, it's possible because they have they appear to have that guy at quarterback, but it's going to be difficult. So I just think that the safe way to go about it would be to play that under to outperform those expectations again. I'm not sure if I can see it here for Cincinnati. Let's talk about the team, though, that they beat.
You know, the one thing I will say before you jump off that is this North is really the each team. You know, in Cleveland drafting the kid that they did as a kicker from LSU, these kickers, I mean, they're in tight games and oh, yeah. McPherson won them, you know, and Tucker wins them, you know, and the margin of error is so, so great. I mean, it's so small. I mean, you know, Tucker, I mean, and McPherson only missed five kicks all year, not counting the playoffs, because he made every one in the playoffs.
Yeah, it was really good.
You know? And, you know, and so, and one of, you know, and he missed, the, you know, he had a 58 long one there. So that's what, to me, close games look to the kicker, you know, whereas like I think Dallas in close games last year, I was worried about Zuerlein. You know, obviously they were too, they cut him. So I think if you're, make sure you look at the backup quarterback and the kicker on if you're going over totals.
Another under I like, and this one might shake people up a little bit. But it's the Kansas City Chiefs. Their win total set at 10.5. And I still like it under because that schedule that they're playing is an absolute gauntlet. And I am just fascinated to see what the next step is for this Chiefs offense. No more Tyreek Hill. Patrick Mahomes, you mentioned it. He's got to play better in 2022. The division is a lot more difficult. The team that's overlooked is the Raiders. They were in the playoffs as well. Everybody loves the Chargers. Everybody loves the Broncos. There's no cakewalk on the schedule here for the Chiefs outside of maybe one or two games. And with that being said, under 10.5, that's kind of how I'm looking at that. Am I going on a fool's errand here or am I on to something?
Well, I mean, I think a lot of it comes down to Mahomes. Can he play to the level that he did a couple years ago? The year, you know, when they won in 19, those numbers are sensational. You know, and if he turns the ball over like he did, I mean, look, they're not going to get played the same way that they were played with Tyreek Hill. We know that. They're going to be played differently. You know, Marquez Valdez-Scantling, I mean, when you look at his ratio to targets and catches, is not very good. He's like a Dave Kingman. You know, Dave Kingman, it was either a home run or five strikeouts, you know. So, but I think defensively, you know, I think that's always the concern when I look at the Chiefs. I worry about them. Especially early in the year, can they get it organized? And without Mathau back there to really lead that secondary, you know, to get them in the right calls, to make the things that they need to do, Justin Reed's going to have to, Thornhill, who's doing this, right? Who's going to make the play? They drafted a Cook kid in the second round. Is he coming in to do that? Yeah. I'm a little bit worried. Plus, I agree with you. The level of comp's always harder. And, you know, look, let's face it. I mean, you know, Kelsey's, you know, this will be Kelsey going into his 10th year. You know, they lose, they miss any of these players for a little bit of time, it's going to be problematic.
Yeah, Kelsey, he's not getting any younger there, and we'll see what happens as he's going to be the guy that's going to have to carry this passing attack outside of Patrick Mahomes. Kelsey, quick side note here, because I saw a prompt on Twitter earlier this week, and it was, which player that is great were you on before everybody else was on? And I remember watching in 2013, I was just kind of just keeping tabs on the draft. And Travis Kelce was a guy that I really wanted the Dallas Cowboys to draft because they needed a tight end at the time. They're like, okay, Witten's getting up there in age. We'll see what they do. They end up drafting Gavin Escobar in the second round. That didn't work out. Travis Kelce goes to the Chiefs in the third round, and a Hall of Fame career later, here we are with Travis Kelce. But that was a guy that if Jerry Jones had just listened to me, even though he doesn't have my contact info, Travis Kelce could have been a Dallas Cowboy.
You know, it's funny. There was a lot of character issues about Kelsey coming out. There was some stuff that obviously proved not to be true, that wasn't true, that was being rumored about, which kills a lot of guys. I think you know, in doing this project for the book, Femi, it happened in that. I mean, there was a Pittsburgh newspaper that killed Marino, a suburban newspaper that put rumors out on Marino that hurt his stock and moved him down. I mean, going into the draft in 83, it was who's going to be one, Marino or Elway? Meanwhile, you know, when the draft draft finally happened, Elway was, Marino was 28th, Elway was one. I mean, he dropped that far because of these alleged rumors. So misinformation can hurt a player, but I think more than anything, I think what Kelce has done is redefined, it kind of changed the position a little bit. Kelce's not a true F, a tight end. He's not a Y. He's an F. And he's a big receiver that runs really good routes. And if you don't, and had he not gone with Andy, could he have been as effective? Probably. But Andy's really good at figuring out how to develop from within. I think he made his career. I think a lot of the Hall of Fame, you know, you talk about where the guy went and did the coach really benefit himself with what he did with him. And I think certainly Kelce benefited from going with Andy. There's no doubt.
Yeah, and Andy Reid was comfortable taking him because he had coached Jason Kelce in Philadelphia there, so he had a relationship with the family.
He knew him. I mean, the same thing. You know, look, they took the biggest risk of all in Tyreek Hill. Nobody was taking, other than the Raiders, there was no teams, and none of the teams should have, based on if you did any homework or due diligence based on what happened at Oklahoma State, you know, you can't. But they did, and they were able to. I remember talking to somebody after they made the pick. I'm like, how could you pick that guy? I mean, the guy was great at Oklahoma State. Like, that was not a sleeper, as many people allege it to be.
No, there was reasons.
The guy was great at Oklahoma. Yeah, there was sincere, proven reasons, and yet they did. Well, we did our homework. Well, we all did our homework. You just reached a different conclusion, that's all.
Yeah, you were just comfortable with said homework.
Yeah.
Let's move along here. The Indianapolis Colts win totals at 9.5. They made the quarterback change, out Carson Wentz, in Matt Ryan. I like that over 9.5 just because of that switch right there. This was a roster that was really good. They just need a quarterback who can stabilize and not lose games, and they have it here in the former MVP.
And I like it, too. I'm with you on it. I like it, too. I like Indy. I have a bug with Indy, whether I think they're going to play better defensively. And I, you know, and I've always bitched about, I know he became the head coach of the Bears, but I've always bitched about Indianapolis's defense. And I bitched about them, you know, because I thought they were too simplistic. Mm-hmm. I didn't think that they were able to attack the team, especially when it came down into the red area, when, you know, you've got to keep people off the board. They were great at creating turnovers, and I'm not going to dispute that. But to me, you know, for all the publicity they were able to accumulate, you know, when they needed to stop people, they really couldn't. And when they needed to stop people on third down, which is what they were supposed to be great at, they were 19th in the league. You know, red zone, they were 25th in the league. I think the addition, to me, I like the over here for two factors. I think Bradley will change a little bit, but I really think John Fox coming in as a quality, whatever you want to call him, he's the Tom Moore of the defense, you know. I think John is really creative. He understands how to do multiple things with different looks and disguises. And I think he's going to really help them. I think he's really going to help them. And I think they have to be helped. Look, they were 31st in the National Football League, Femi, last year in giving up touchdown passes.
Wow.
They were third. Like, people just ignore some of the numbers that were so bad for their defense. Like, I don't, you know, like, to me, good for Eberflus. He got a head coaching job. God bless. Move on. But I don't understand how you could watch his tape and think that was really elite defensive coaching.
Yeah, Eberflus, it's a vanilla scheme because he's a Rod Marinelli guy. He used to be the linebackers coach for the Dallas Cowboys there, and a lot of Cowboys fans wanted him to become the defensive coordinator after Rod Marinelli left there. But it's kind of a vanilla scheme. You know what you're going to face. It's more so based on the talent than the actual scheme. John Fox is going to be the senior defensive assistant for the Indianapolis Colts here. Want to bounce two more teams off you here and see which one you like the most. The Jets, the win total is at 5.5. The Jaguars win total is at 6. Those are the teams that have the top two picks in 2021.
I mean, for all the love the Jets are getting, you know, Joe Douglas is already executive of the year. I mean, he's just give them the award right now. I mean, Jesus Christ. I mean, they're at 5.5. I mean, and look, let's face it. The books have a good reason for it. You know, they're rarely not that wrong. I don't know about you, Femi, but one thing I've learned working at VEASAN here is when something looks too easy, it never ends up being.
The 5.5, it makes sense when you look at the schedule, because I was looking at this the other day and I was like, my God, like, it wouldn't shock me if they lost their first 8 or 9 games. I mean, they're home for Baltimore, at Cleveland, home Bengals, at Pittsburgh, home Dolphins, at Packers, at Broncos, home Patriots, home Bills. Like, they could lose all 9 of those games. Now, if Zach Wilson takes that step, maybe they can win. Because I like the over on both of those teams, 5.5 for the Jets, 6 for the Jaguars, just because I think the roster moves that they made in free agency will help them get over that win total. I tweeted out in free agency, I said, if Zach Wilson is worth a damn, this team should be able to win 7 games. And we'll see if Zach Wilson is worth a damn in 2022. Didn't look like it in 2021, but I'm going to give him a pass there based on being a rookie and there being a tough situation. But here it is for this New York Jets team. They made quite a bit of personnel moves, and it appears to be a really good roster based on the critics of everybody evaluating Joe Douglas's offseason. But both these teams, they could take that step to be a little bit frisky in 2022.
I mean, from the Jets standpoint, I think what gets kind of lost in the shuffle a little bit here is how bad they were defensively. Mm-hmm. I mean, I know Salai is the mastermind of defense, and you know, Mr. Clean is, you know, he's got everything going, but they were 32nd in points allowed. They were 32nd in yards allowed. They were 32nd in teams being able to run the ball into the end zone on them. They were 32nd in rushing attempts. They were 29th in yards allowed rushing. Oh, and let's talk about their passing. They were 30th in yards allowed. I mean, they did nothing. And they were 31st in creating turnovers. They were 27th on third down. They were 21st in the red zone. I mean, they did nothing good defensively. We all focus on Zach Wilson. Mm-hmm. You know, they did nothing good defensively. Nothing. Now, you know, maybe now that they get back Lawson, that'll help them certainly rush. Maybe Jermaine Johnson will give them some. DJ Reed in the secondary will help them. Sauce Gardner will help them. But they're going to need a lot of help. I mean, because those numbers are and I think that's why they're at 5.5, Em.
Yeah, and the division is not easy. I mean, Buffalo is a Super Bowl favorite. New England made the playoffs last year. Mac Jones in year two. Miami, they made the acquisition to get Tyreek Hill. So the three teams that they're facing in the division look like they're better than they were a year ago. And the Jets, I think, are better than they were a year ago as well. But it's going to be hard to make up that ground when you have those 6 difficult games in addition to the other games on the schedule here. But let's take one.
The Jags.
Yep.
I don't know how to predict on the Jags. I mean, look, I think a lot of it comes down to Peterson's ability to coach Trevor Lawrence. I think the Jags should be better because the one thing I think the distraction's out of the building.
Yep.
You know, I mean, the guy that was destroying the team is out of the building. You know. You know, so they've got to get better in that area.
And that's what I'm banking on. Because I think that as bad as this Urban Meyer thing has been reported and what we see on the outside, I think it might have been worse on the inside. And I'm banking.
It had to be.
Yeah, it had to be. So I'm banking on the fact that they have an adult in the room and Doug Peterson, a Super Bowl winning head coach. I think that can allow them to make that quantum leap here in 2022. Just the removal of Urban Meyer being such a big upgrade here for Jacksonville. But we'll see what happens though. Trevor Lawrence, I'm rooting for him year two. I thought he's gonna be a hell of a quarterback. We'll see what happens here now that he's actually being coached by an NFL caliber coach. On the other side, we celebrate the Lombardi family here. This is the GM Shuffle with Michael Lombardi. All right, Michael, before we got out of here, I wanted to ask you about the really cool article that The Athletic wrote. This is Vic Tafer, who is here in Las Vegas, writes about the Las Vegas Raiders, one of their senior beat writers there. And he wrote about Mick Lombardi, your son, Mick, who is the offensive coordinator now out here in Las Vegas. And you were quoted in the article. Mick was quoted in the article. Just as a family, how proud are you guys of Mick and Matt, who's out there in Carolina? Just it's a football family. And I thought it was a really cool article. If you haven't read it, make sure to check that out over at The Athletic.
Yeah, you know, obviously, it's certainly it's tremendous. And, you know, it's you know, as a father, more than anything, it's you're proud of your son and you want him to do as well as he can. And, and he's really worked hard to get to this level. And he's got a great opportunity with Josh. He had a great opportunity learning from Coach Belichick as well. So I'm excited for him. And I'm excited for Matthew, too. I think Matthew's got, you know, a lot of ability like his brother. So Millie and I mean, it's just really kind of a as you get to this stage of your life, you become very proud of your children's accomplishments, and then you get to watch your grandchildren create havoc for them. So it's a lot of fun.
And your grandchildren are getting the same experience that Mick and Matthew got when they were young. I thought it was a really cool nugget in the article about how they would run to the phone when Mr. Davis would call late at night there. And I'm sure
it was before a football cell phones, lesson for them. You know, this is before we all had cell phones or Blackberries, you know, and so he would call the house at all hours and they couldn't wait to answer it, you know, and so And he was always like my mother. He called one time when I was still in Cleveland. He called my house in Cleveland before. I think this is kind of like just when Bill got there, and mm-hmm. we were talking about Derrick Brooks at the time. He and I had developed a relationship, and we were discussing a lot of the players in the draft. And then after the draft ended in Cleveland, we all went out to dinner and had a celebration. My mom was home watching the children, watching Mickey. I think Mickey was the only one born at the time. And he called, and he ends up talking to my mother for like 45 minutes.
Wow.
Like on the phone, talking about Billie Holiday, the music of the 30s, the 40s. And my mother, I mean, that man is the nicest man I've ever talked to in all my life. I mean, like, it just, he had that charisma and charm. I wrote a little bit about it in the book about when he went to recruit Lance Allworth at Arkansas. He could turn it on now. He was good. But when he got those kids on the phone, he was great, you know? And I'll tell you, the one thing I've always was tremendous. Every time I called him, mm-hmm. you know, Mrs. Davis might answer the phone, and she always, 1,000% always said, "How are Millie and the boys?" Every time.
Wow. Yeah, that's really cool there. And it just goes to show you the family and football and how this all began for you guys there. It's a really cool article there. I encourage everybody to go out there and read it, because it's a family that's passing down traditions down to generations here. And I thought it was really cool that he mentioned how you didn't really pressure him or anything to get into the scouting side of things. And like, and he went into the coaching when he was out there.
I didn't want him to be in scouting. Yeah. I didn't want him to go through what I went through, which is you have all the, you know, scouts are great at, you know, at telling you about the draft 3 years after it's over, you know, and who gets credit for this pick and who doesn't. You know, as I've told them since they were little kids, when you're a coach, you have tape. The tape shows what you teach. You're either teaching it or allowing it to happen. This is who you are. You put your tape up. In personnel, you can't put your tape up. You know, I mean, I still get blamed for Jamarcus Russell. You know, I still get blamed for some picks that I had nothing to do with and that would have argued against them. And certainly I deserve to get blamed for some bad picks. There's no doubt we all make mistakes. I'm not absolving myself. But to me, at least in coaching, you can prove what you're doing. And scouting, it's all, at times, it becomes just a little bit of he said, she said.
Yeah, no, I think it's a really good note to end on. Like I mentioned, it's on The Athletic. Vic Tafer did a terrific job writing this. He spoke to Michael, he spoke to Mick, and it's a really cool article to get a little bit more background insight on the family life of the Lombardis. But next week, Michael, it's the return of Sopranos in 60. I'm going to get caught up, baby. Now that the NBA playoffs have slowed down, we're going to start to ramp up the Sopranos episodes.
There we go.
And we'll have a report next podcast.
And we'll start working on the NBA draft, too.
Yes. We'll see if we can send a meal plan over for our buddy Chet Holmgren. Yeah. There. See if we can put on an extra 50 is probably what he needs there. But that does it for the podcast. As always, make sure to subscribe, rate, and review. Thank you to DraftKings. Thank you to Visa. And thank you to Michael. And thank you to our guy, Elliot Bowman, filling in for Stephen Bond.